Episode 196.
We need guys that are what I would term as soft skill learners. And those are the guys that can take things that they read in a book and translate it to their hands, and they can understand what's going on. And they ask the questions of why something works this way, not just how does it work, but why does it work this way? Why did they do that? What were they thinking of doing that? And how can I understand this very well so that I understand the workings of it? We need the guys that have those kind of aptitudes in this business, and those are the guys that are going to succeed.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Hey, aftermarketers, welcome to Remarkable Results Radio. I'm Carm Capriato, and you are in the right place, I guarantee, to learn from aftermarket professionals. You benefit as I exercise my craft and chronicle the best insights and stories from the aftermarket's brightest. Today I'm with Gary Sheritz, the RepairPal ASE Master Automobile Technician of the Year, 2016. This episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, don't forget about the show notes page for Gary Sheritz. It's at remarkableresults.biz/E196. Hey, do you know how many different aftermarket professionals listen to the podcast? Well, here's an overview. Service professional, technician, service manager, service advisor, jobber, distributor, salesperson, business coach, association member, educator, student, and even manufacturers are listeners to the Premier Automotive Aftermarket Podcast. Now go to your smartphone app store and get the free podcast app for your smart device. Search for Remarkable Results Radio, download, and get every episode right to your phone. In November 2016, ASE announced that 45 technicians were honored as Master Automobile Technicians. Now, I've done a few interviews with these outstanding industry people, and here's another. Meet Gary Sheritz, the RepairPal ASE Master Automobile Technician of the Year 2016. Gary has a great story to share, and he had no clue that he would ever be a technician and now a service manager. See, he went to college to be an electrical engineer, and as fate would have it, he never finished and found himself at a Chevy dealer as a used car get-ready helper. Gary explains a watershed moment for him when GM's new 3C electronic systems with electronic carbs came out. He was basically in the right place at the right time. He's now service manager for Christian Brothers in Land O'Lakes, Florida, and shares some sage advice for technicians and service managers. He also shares his shift from technician to service manager and talks about the value of the ASE certification. Good episode. Now enjoy this great discussion with Gary Sheritz. A warm welcome to Gary Sheritz, the RepairPal ASE Master Automobile Technician of the Year in 2016. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carm. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great. Hey, look at how cool it is to get recognized. And based on our pre-call, this is the second time for you.
Yeah, it's quite surprising. I really don't know how they do this stuff, but you know they did this twice, and I'm very flattered and honored.
When was the last time you were honored?
It was in 1992 when I first took all the tests. Actually, it's the first time I took them. So, I was really aghast at that point in time because I was just thinking I really did okay just to pass them. I had no idea what I did on them.
And who was the corporate sponsor back then in 92?
NTDRA, National Tire Dealers and Retreaders Association. I was working for Donaldson Tire at the time.
Got it. And now you're with Christian Brothers.
Yes, sir.
And somewhere in Florida, where?
In Land O'Lakes, Florida, right off of a couple miles to the west of 75 on in Land O'Lakes.
You always been a Florida boy?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was 6 weeks old when my parents moved here from Tennessee, and I never left. That was in 1960, so I've been here all the time.
So you know something about oranges?
Yeah, I know a few things. Growing up in an orange grove, as your refreshment on the tree, as you're working in the orange groves.
I found that so fascinating to hear you telling me the story about, you know, growing up in an orange grove, and your dad was basically a worker on the farm.
Oh, yeah. He tended to everything. In fact, my mom's father, my grandfather, worked with him for a little while. But other than that, he tended to somewhere close to 275, 280 acres by himself for the most part.
Big job.
And a lot of different fruit varieties as well. We had tangerines, tangelos. We had navel oranges. We had Valencia oranges, grapefruit, all different versions of grapefruits and things like that. So there was all kinds of things.
Did anything in your growing up lend itself to you being mechanical?
Well, let me just tell you, when you're working on an orange grove or any type of, I think, any type of agricultural facility, there's machinery that has to be repaired and maintained, and you got to get pretty good at doing some of that stuff. And might I say that most of it doesn't go by the book.
Yeah.
So you got to be a little bit innovative, which, you know, you learn right from the beginning to think outside the box. So that kind of thinking, that kind of strategy, that kind of influence bodes well in the automotive industry, because there's so many things that do not fall inside the realms of you. When you find a problem, you just fix it this way and this way only.
So you're on the orange grove. You don't have a clue that you're going to be in the automotive industry, and you go to school for electronics?
Yeah, that was it. I had an interest in high school. Actually, I really didn't know what I wanted to do even through my senior year of high school. I just was still trying to toss up what was going on. And then I had this bug to try to learn how to get into electronics, because it always intrigued me. And it was a growing thing. It was before Apple computers came out. Interesting thing, we were one of the first schools, that when I went to the DeRay Institute of Technology in Atlanta, we were one of the first schools to get the Apple One computer. So that's just to give you an idea of how long ago that was. But anyway, I had just an opportunity to go to this school. And so on a last minute decision, I really wanted to go there, and I went through it, and I really enjoy it, and I still enjoy it. That was back in the days. Let me tell you how far this dates back.
Yeah.
We were writing programs in a language called Fortran.
Sure.
And they were on punch cards.
Oh yeah. Oh.
And we would write our programs on a stack of punch cards at a key punch. And we'd have a stack of maybe 50 cards, and if you even got them out of order, the program wouldn't run. And you wouldn't know until the next day.
All right.
That's how archaic this is.
I'll come clean with you, man. In college, that's what we did. So you and I must go way back in the day.
Yeah,
all right.
We're back.
All right, I get it. So you went to DeVry, but somehow you came out, you did a few things, and you found a Chevy dealer to work for.
Yeah, I was real close to an engineering degree, but I just wasn't having enough money. And it was at the end of the 80s. Carter administration was in power at that point in time, and there was just the gas shortages. I mean, I worked at a gas station, and sometimes we would close down early because we just ran out of our ration of fuel that we could serve for the day. So there was a lot of things that just limited the income that I could make. And so, quite frankly, I just ran out of money just shy of being able to get the degree. So I left school, came home, wanted to work at one or two places around here that actually were electronics firms, and couldn't catch on. They really just were not hiring anybody. One of them told me I was overqualified. I said, well, you know.
Wait a minute. Overqualified and you didn't finish school? Wow.
Yeah. Go figure that one out. I think that was just a line they were giving me. But whatever the case, they weren't hiring. And so I had been tinkering with my own cars for a while, as young kids in high school are wont to do, especially in that day and age when we could. And
yeah, you could, and it was probably out of necessity too.
Well, it was out of necessity, but mine wasn't so much out of necessity as it was out of just desire to tinker. You know, I've kind of been that way.
And just think, it led to a career.
Yeah, that was kind of a backdoor thing, because I really was just I had a toolbox literally the size of a small tackle box at the time. But with that toolbox the size of a tackle box, I actually put an engine from a GTO into a Firebird and drove it around. So, I mean, I the things that I accomplished at that point in time amazes me when I've got four toolboxes the size of my garage.
It was a miracle.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was easier, too. But anyway, so I started looking around for just anything because I had to have work, and I ended up getting a job as a mechanics helper for a used car dealer in the used car department of a Chevrolet dealership in downtown Clearwater.
A helper.
A helper. And I mean, I wasn't even real good at that.
Well, apparently you go from helper to what you're doing today. You had to have the right attitude.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the agricultural end of it. Anything that you wanted to do, you wanted to do it to the best of your ability. I don't care what line of work you're in, and my kids all know this because I preach it to them even now, and they're all adults. Whatever you're going to do, do it to the very best of your ability. If you're not going to do it well, don't even do it. Just find another thing to do. Just don't go to doing something just for a job. Do it to be good at it. Strive to be good at it. Strive to be the best you can be.
You know that 70% of professional technicians install Moog? Do you know who is best in class in engineering R&D? Do you know who holds 47 patents and has 28 dedicated engineers on staff? Yeah, Moog. You should know that 85% of Moog socket-style components are manufactured in North America, and that makes Moog best in class for manufacturing. And since 1966, every NASCAR championship has been won on Moog parts. But you knew that. I know why you install Moog. They solve your problems. Over the years, Moog has provided problem-solving innovations like a patented Preston cover plate, powdered metal gusher bearing technology, compression-loaded ball joints with a pre-installed integral dust boot, and vertical control arm bushings. You know why you install Moog. Enhanced durability, improved performance, and ease of installation. For more information, go to moogparts.com. Now you know.
So the opportunity in the dealership was in the early 80s, and all this electronic stuff starts coming out. And I think you looked at that as an opportunity.
What was really funny was that my job at – they were cutting back in the used car get-ready department, and so they actually let me go from there. But they made a segue in the new car get ready department for me to just go over there and prep these cars, which was kind of – it was really a fun job. I didn't make very much money at it, but it was really fun because you just go through this checklist and make sure the cars were prepped for delivery, and then you had to drive them for 15 miles. So we do all the prep work in the morning, and we drive all afternoon. So it was kind of fun. But what happened was we hit that. At just an opportune time because it was in the late 80s and 80 and a half for all those guys that were old enough to remember this and beyond. That's when GM first came out with the 3C system and the electronic controlled carburetors. And it was driving the older guys nuts because they just couldn't get a handle on how that stuff interlaced. Very simple electronic mechanical circuits, but GM probably warrantied more computers in that first 2 years than they ever did since then, because if it wasn't something that they could figure out, then they just threw another computer at it. Sometimes they'd do two or three of them before they would stop them. So, but anyway, I understood the circuits. It was pretty simple, and it was just a segue in for me to stay in this business. And you know, from there, I just learned from a lot of pretty good sound guys that taught me even more work ethic involved with the automotive industries and just how to think, once again, outside of the box, but also be able to be disciplined to perform the right testing so that I could arrive at the correct conclusion each time. And it's a combination of being, kind of innovative in a sense, and not being getting yourself boxed into a corner, being determined that you're going to find the answer, and then staying disciplined so that you don't miss any steps as you're going through the whole process.
As a service writer today, do you coach any of your young techs that are working for you because, you know, you've kind of been there and done it?
I'm the service manager, so I have to do a little bit more than that. I have to be responsible for not only getting them to where they need to be, but also making certain that that the customer it's kind of a really complicated thing because I have to really kind of see the cars from one end to the other. I have to get the information from the customer and make sure that I listen with a technician's ear as to what we're trying to look for. And then from there, translate that to the tech and then stay on top of the tech so that we stay on point to find that focal problem. A lot of times you'll find other things that need to be addressed, of course. And so we also have to prioritize things and know how to put it in perspective for the customer so that the customer does what's right for them. And, you know, ultimately you have to take the customer standpoint, you have to take the tech standpoint, and you have to combine all that stuff together. But yeah, I do a lot of instructing. I do a lot of coaching. Sometimes I get my hands in the middle of it. I did that yesterday, as a matter of fact, to where you just make certain that everything is taken care of and you do it the correct way. If you were the customer, this is the way you'd want it done. That's what I do.
So you have kept up your ASEs, even though you're not wrenching right now.
Yeah. To be honest with you, it doesn't gain me any type of financial edge at all. It doesn't do anything for me from a standpoint of credentials in my present occupation or my present job title. But I find that I have a lot more credentials when it comes to dealing with the techs. I find I have a lot more credentials when it comes to dealing with customers if they have to ask. And I don't often have those questions, but the honest truth is that it also gives me a gauge as to am I staying on top of this stuff or am I fooling myself? And that's probably more the question that I had going into this series of testing than prior was just, am I staying current with this as I think I am?
So you obviously value your ASE certifications.
I do. And I'll be honest with you. I will be very honest with you. I didn't to begin with because I had a lot of guys that worked with me early on. I'm talking 20 years ago that passed a few tests. And I just like, what are you guys doing? You don't know what you're doing with this kind of stuff, you know, and that kind of stuff did happen. But by and large, that's the exception. It's not the rule. And most of the guys that take the ASE testing and pass it for the correct reasons, and that is they're trying to stay current and they're trying to stay relevant. That's what I'm looking for with their industry. I find that they, if their attitude is right, that's the main thing. They're gonna do well. That is what I primarily found was the difference between the guys that I really didn't have much love lost for, if you will, with the ASE certifications. It wasn't so much the certifications that were the problem. I learned to realize what it was, the attitude with which they approached the job in general.
Is the team at your Christian Brothers location in Land O'Lakes, Florida, all ASE certified?
They're ASE certified, but not in all areas. Not everybody in all areas. I've got one guy that's a master certification, has a master certification like myself, and then I have several other guys that have various certifications in different levels. But, you know, all of them, as a service manager, you kind of got to know where your guys' strengths and weaknesses are. But at the same time, you want to stretch them a little bit. So you'll give one guy that's not real well versed with something in an area a little bit of that just to get them going. And then you kind of stay over their shoulder to help them learn so that they develop into what you need them to ultimately be, which is well-rounded and well-versed.
Gary, the consumer's perception of ASE, do you find that they understand?
I don't know if they really understand ASE per se, as far as the organization. But I think they understand the credentialing portion of it. This is a national certification program that is standardized so that you can compare. It's not a one size fits all. You get this guy. It's not like McDonald's, you know, where you go into McDonald's in Georgia and you go to McDonald's in Iowa and you're going to get the same taste and burger and everything like that. It's not like that, but it is a way that you can compare people that are in this business and have some common ground in which to compare them. Now, there are other factors involved. And I coach people when they ask me about how to find a shop. I tell them to go in and have a little bit of an interview with the guys in charge and just see how they approach the repair field. If they're asking enough questions about what the customer is interested in, then that's probably a place they want to be. If they're more focused on just simply fixing a particular problem and not too concerned about, you know, the overall purpose of the vehicle and how it's being used and stuff like that, they'll interview somebody else, you know, at least one or two other places, and just see if you can get somebody that's interested in it from your perspective. And don't be afraid, by the way, to ask people that are local there who they use and what they've heard about different places. Don't underestimate the power of personal testimony, because that's huge.
Being a top technician takes a lot of hard work, and you can't do it alone. I believe you would agree, vehicle technologies, repair procedures, and diagnostics are changing every year. That's where Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Guru Garage can help. The Garage Gurus program has been designed by and for technicians and offers the most comprehensive program of support tools in the industry. There's a nationwide network of Guru on-site training and technology centers where you can get hands-on training with the equipment and tools needed to solve real work-related challenges. And when you can't make it to on-site training, there's Gurus Online, a 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of course options. Garage Gurus also helps where it matters most, on the job, in your shop. Their Gurus on the Go technology fleet, well, they bring the latest products and technology demos right to you. If you need a quick part lookup, the Gurus On Demand app gives you fast, easy, and accurate info. And when you need help with a technical issue, their bilingual ASE-certified Gurus On Call are ready to help. And this year, they're introducing the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program, which gets you points towards free gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts brands. It costs nothing to join, and you could start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageguruz.com, learn all about the Garage Gurus program, and start earning points today. I am curious about something. You're the service manager, and I've spoken to a lot of owners and some techs. I said, hey, would you love to be a service manager someday? And they go, oh, no, I'm not a people person. And so you've made the leap. Obviously, you must have that people skill that brings you there. Talk to me about that transition for you.
Well, that's kind of interesting because, honestly, my dad is probably the most people-oriented person you would probably ever meet. He doesn't have an enemy in the world. You can see him walk up. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we'd go down to the barbershop, and I thought he knew everybody just no matter who it was. And he really didn't. He just talked to him like he'd known him for years.
You know what you call people like that? Your dad never met a stranger.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And they weren't if they were strange and standoffish from their point, they didn't stay that way very long, because he just warmed them up, and that's the way it was. And I inherited that, I guess. And it's just been pretty easy for me to relate to people. But the main thing is, you know, guys that don't want to be service managers and talking to customers are afraid of a couple of different things. They're afraid of taking the responsibility of somebody else's work and having to translate that to the customers. And I will tell you, that is the biggest portion of my concern as well, because, you know, it takes a certain level of trust with your technicians that they're doing it the way you want it done, and you're conveying that assurance to the customer that it's being done in that way. So it's a two-way street as far as that's concerned. The biggest concern, the biggest area that you know, strikes me as the toughest is being able to convey to the customer honestly and truthfully that it's being done the way that you described that it's being done. And then the other thing is that sometimes they're afraid that the customer is going to be concerned about what they tell them as far as you know, being objection about the price or, you know, the extent of the repair or something like that. Some people are afraid of calling them up and saying, hey, you know what, I hate to tell you this, but, you know, you got a hole in the side of the block, you know. Yeah, those are tough calls. But at the same time, the truth is the truth and reality is reality. And they're going to hear it from somebody. And if you can, you know, go around it and you can find a tactful way to bring it to them and maybe even tell them, you knew when you brought this in, it was just pretty bad, right? You know, and so, I mean, you kind of got to find the common ground and then work from there. But, and those are tough calls, I'll agree, but it's not the end of the world.
For all the years you've been a tech, have you ever just continued to look at your service manager and said, I can do that job? And when am I going to do that job?
I didn't aspire to be a service manager, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
I didn't. But there was a point where after crawling underneath the dashes for so many years and your body just tells you, you know, you're frequenting the chiropractor far more than you probably should. And eventually it's going to get to a point where the chiropractor can't straighten you out anymore. So your body kind of tells you that, you know, it's time to move on into other areas. And so I was kind of looking for a way away from the physical rigors of the wrenching, because I was doing a lot of dash work. I was doing a lot of contortionist type stuff, getting into certain places, because when your main line is electronic, sometimes you got to chase those things in most difficult areas.
On the other hand, as a service manager, have you ever felt the rush or the need to just to go back in the shop and either do it or show someone?
You know, that's the truth. I mean, the thing is, you know, I sometimes get frustrated because it doesn't happen often, but it does happen sometimes when you just want to grab the tech and say, look, this is the way you do it, you know, and then you go in there and grab the wrenches. And I've been known to grab the wrenches every now and then just to show them how it's done. But
does it help your relationship with the tech knowing that you're a master tech and you've turned wrenches for all these years? Does it help? Is there a bigger bond?
Well, you know, the honest truth is there is, but that can be taken two ways. It depends on how you approach it. You got to approach it from a standpoint that you're looking to help them out and you're their friend. You're not there to hurt them. You're there to help them. And you can take it two ways. You can go out there and you can just say, look, this is the way it's done. And, you know, bang, 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 bang. Can't you get this stuff right? And if you do that, you're going to make a lot of enemies. Nobody's going to work for you and everything else. But that's not the way I treat people in general, so why would I treat techs that way? I've been there. I've done that. I know how difficult it is. I've been at the very lowest levels of this thing, and so I don't want to poison their growth that way. So I look to come alongside them and say, look, here's what we got to do. Let me help you with this. And if they do something different and I think that they should have taken a different approach, I'll say, you know, let me ask you a question. If you did it this way, where would you have ended up? And why don't you think about taking it this road once or twice, you know? And it's always looking to build them up. It's not looking to tear them down. I'm not a negative guy. I think I get a lot more out of my guys and a lot more production. And it's a lot more fun if we're positive rather than negative. So I try to stay, I'm a glass half full guy all the time.
Great.
I really am.
So how was your meeting in Concord, North Carolina, when they brought you up on stage and, you know, tell me how you felt.
I was very honored, very humbled. I met a lot of great guys there. When ASC did this, they really rolled out the red carpet. And on top of it all, there was a lot of guys from all different areas of the automotive industry. There was guys there that were, they're top of their field as far as, you know, management. There were guys that were there in body work and, you know, all kinds of different things. And then there were Honda techs, there were Chrysler techs and, you know, in their fields and stuff. So there was a good group of guys. I think there was 43 of us all together that went and in different areas. You know, it was neat as far as that was concerned. It was very humbling. They just treated us terrific. We had such a good time. It was so nice. I was very honored.
Well, I'm proud of you. Congratulations. Couple of things now. You know, I love the fact that you've been on both sides of the coin, if you will, between both teching and being a service manager. So great advice to give to a young person that wants to join the industry. They're coming out of college, Votech College. And what kind of advice would you give to a young person if you, you know, just met at a friend's house?
Two things. Well, actually, maybe three things. Number one, if you're looking to get into this business, make sure that you have an aptitude and a good background to where you can learn, and it wouldn't hurt to get off-site training away from automotive into the electronics field. Make sure you understand that, because that's not going away. It's becoming far and far more influential on all of the cars and the way that they're doing it. You gotta have that basis. I can't see a way around that any longer. Number two, don't look at this as though this is something where it's just a job and you're doing it because you think that there's good money in it. Do it because you want to do it. Have a focus, have a drive. Do it because you like it. Don't do it because you just try to make a job. And then the third thing, strive to be the very best you can be. Work at it, work at it, work at it. And if you think that you made a mistake somewhere, find out how to avoid that mistake in the future, learn from it, and don't make that mistake again. Make a mental note and keep ever looking to learn.
You obviously see a lot of opportunity for techs in this industry.
I do, but bear in mind, it's a little different than what it was when you and I were growing up. A lot of times, if you'll remember, they were dumping the guys that didn't make it as doctors and lawyers or weren't in those aptitude cases, you know, into the power mechanics class. And then they would go and they'd work with their hands for the rest of their lives. And that was just the way that the whole field was visioned. It's not nice, I don't think. And it really wasn't reality in certain cases, but it was the way that everybody kind of tended to view it. Those guys that are what I call hard skill learners, they have to work with their hands all the time, are going to struggle in this job anymore. We need guys that are what I would term as soft skill learners. And those are the guys that can take things that they read in a book and translate it to their hands, and they can understand what's going on. And they ask the questions of why something works this way, not just how does it work, but why does it work this way? Why did they do that? What were they thinking of doing that? And how can I understand this very well so that I understand the workings of it? We need the guys that have those kind of aptitudes in this business, and those are the guys that are going to succeed. Everybody else that really doesn't translate, you know, things from either video learning or book learning or anything like that into their hands are going to struggle. It's not something I like about it. It's just the reality of it.
Yeah. What are your techs doing to stay current? What are you doing to get them leader-led online? How many hours a year are you providing for your people?
There's training classes that we have through all of our suppliers that come up, and we encourage them. We pay for those to keep them current and keep them going in. There's a lot of helps that are online for particular jobs where they learn a lot through it. Websites and membership programs like IETN and Identifix are very useful tools, and they're good learning points too, because if you don't understand certain things about it, you can peruse some things about certain little areas and you learn an awful lot about what's going on, not only for that particular job, but just in general things that happen, you know, on other vehicles. And so that kind of thing that's just constant on the job training and stuff like that. But then there's other classes to prep them for some of the things that are coming out that are later. There's refreshers on certain things that they've learned about certain other cars that have been out for a little while in systems and stuff like that. So we pay for all that stuff, and we keep them as current as we possibly can. Number of hours, man, I don't know. It's everybody that does this, that wants to do it, puts a lot of hours into it, and it doesn't start or stop with the time clock in the morning and the afternoon. So I'd say that most of our techs put, you know, 100 or more hours in just general training in all kinds of different venues every year.
Okay, great. Hey, now, on the other hand, advice to service advisors, service managers.
Well, Listen to your customers. Put yourself in their shoes and put yourself in your tech shoes and try to get the two of them to meet in the middle. In other words, when you're working with a customer, you really want to work with the customer to find out what they're trying to get out of their car and what their problem is with the car currently. Always fix the go after the problem that they came in for, because if they got a broken ashtray, it doesn't matter if you fix their flat tire. If they don't fix a broken ashtray, they're going to remember the ashtray was what they came in for, and that didn't get fixed. Listen to your customers very well. Try to come alongside them. The two of you team up to do what's right for them. And then the other thing is listen to what they're describing. And then you take the tech's point of view is what does he need to hear so he can find what they're looking for? Don't just say, hey, there's a rattling noise at certain times. Say, hey, there's a rattling noise. It seems to only happen when she hits a bump and makes a right-hand turn. And it only happens once in the morning after she's driven about 3 miles. You know, get as much information as you can so you can replicate the thing. Don't make it hard for anybody.
Great advice. Any words of wisdom that you use on a daily basis to just drive your world?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, being with a Christian-based organization, where I pray every morning that what we see coming through the door is something where we view the customers as being the top priority. I pray for the safety of my guys. I pray for wisdom in how to counsel and deal with the customers. I pray that on a daily basis, I keep my emotions in check and that I just focus on the problems and we just work the problems until we get them done and don't sweat the minor little details. Just, you know, they're bumps in the roads. Just keep on moving, keep going until you get everything accomplished. And don't focus on the dollars. Focus on getting the job done. The dollars will take care of themselves. But if you focus on the dollars, then that's all you're going to get, and it's going to be temporary. But if you focus on getting the job done, and if you focus on taking care of that customer, you're not going to have to worry about the dollars. It'll take care of itself.
Got it. Hey, Gary Sheridz, Repair Pale, ASE Master Automobile Technician of the Year 2016. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. For more on Gary Sheridz, don't miss the show notes page for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E196. Hey, I love to hear from you. Any questions or comments, email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz or head over to the contact page on the website. Hey, you're an important reason I bring you this library of interviews, this powerhouse of content, and I hope you're profiting from the wisdom and insights found in every episode. It's favor time. Tell a friend about the podcast, and thanks for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.